Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
I don't even know what you just said. I'm dying to find that out. No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. And tonight, so far, no Jeff Ritzman yet. We're waiting for him to call in. But with me, that's good. It's Christmas party. Christmas party vibe. As we build this, this is a Paratopia Christmas party, because I've gone through the trouble of getting Jeff Ritzman, who should be here soon, and Jeremy Vaney back together here on Banal of America Audio, because, their fans miss them, and I always loved doing these trifecta conversations, so I figured, hey, final season, some of the best times we've had on the show were and off the air, really, the three of us sort of laughing and digging into this shit together. So it was like, let's get. I obviously knew I was going to have you guys on for the final season, so it was like, all the elements have come together here. Let's do a show here, and I can get away with telling people it's a gift for the holidays, which is good. I know Vanny will appreciate that.
Like tofurkey.
Exactly, like tofurkey. So with me here right now is Jeremy Vaney. Thanks for doing, thanks for being a part of us. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for all the years of laughter and fun. And, here's to many more. And Merry Christmas. Welcome to the Christmas party.
Well, thank you, and thanks for inviting me on. I didn't realize that that my phone was on as your theme was running. So I was yelling at a cat to shut up. His name is Elvis.
I thought you said like Elvis sucks or something. I was like, what is he?
I said Elvis,
what is
shut
he
up.
Saying? Oh, so I was close with
not
the
Elvis. Yeah. So just so people know, because I know this is a paranormal show and he was alive like at least well into the 80s. This is not that Elvis. This is a cat.
No.
Hello? Is this thing on?
Yeah, it's not the Elvis. No, we're good. I'm sending messages to Jeff. I'm trying to let him know we're on the air here.
I'll
keep talking. So wait a minute now. Let's talk about this.
That.
You got married.
Yes.
You got married.
Oh yeah.
You said it on Facebook, so it's legal. What's the story with that? Congratulations.
Thank you. When a man really loves a woman. Thanks. Carol and I legally got married through a friend. So it was just the three of us doing a little private ceremony on the beach. And then late next year, we'll do an official Hawaiian ceremony and invite friends and family, you among them. So come on out.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah. I'm thinking about making the trip. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, Jeff might actually step foot on a plane, but I have a hard time believing.
Does he not fly?
He can't even show up for this, so I don't know. No,
I
think he does not like to fly.
All right. Have you noticed, without getting into the nitty-gritty and the sticky-icky, have you noticed anything distinctly different about sort of being married? Because, you and I have had many long conversations to the delight of the people we call the Muppets. From the good Parade family, who are intimately familiar with your life. Actually, your wife was a good Parade listener, So you married a Muppet.
That's right. Lucky
which
her.
Is what, you know. So have you noticed a difference in you know, because they say, oh, it's just a piece of paper, but is it just a piece of paper, Vanny? Enlighten me, you know. I don't know if anyone will ever marry my ass.
Probably not your ass, but the rest of you maybe. It is more than a piece of paper.
Oh.
I actually thought, you know, I never pictured myself married. Probably when I was a little kid, I did. But my adult life, I never thought I would ever get married. And then when I pictured it, you know, you always hear horror stories. But no, it's actually great. There is a slight difference. It's like there's the security that person really does love you and really is in it for you and you for her. You know what I mean? Like there's no, I mean, that's kind of the ultimate thing that two people can do to proclaim their love and commitment to each other. So that is nice. It's like any insecurities I might have had are out the door.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's the unconditional love. So you're like, all right, well, I can do all kinds of things now, you know, that she loves me despite,
well,
you know, despite of all my flaws, all my many flaws.
Sure. But
yeah,
I don't think I could get away with anything. God knows I'd try.
Yeah,
but,
you know what
no.
I mean. Within reason. Yeah. I've seen enough sitcoms to know that. All right, here he is, folks. Jeff Ritzman, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Nice.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jer.
That went well.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, we had Vanny enlightening us to life as a married man, so I don't know.
Yeah, let's cut to many years later. Jeff, how do you like marriage? How does it go from here? Because I'm in the love phase. What happens? Take us through what happens next.
I think, well, first you'll enter the doldrum stage.
doldrums.
And then it will be, I don't know, I guess you could call it kind of a patient longing. In other words, a longing for what it used to be. And then
Jesus.
Somewhere along the line,
wow.
it just becomes rude now. I tease, of course. no, it's fine all the way around. I mean, you know, if you're with the right person, it's pretty much like it is all the time. I mean, I've been married to Lisa for 25 years now, and you know, you have your ups and downs certainly, but for the most part, I'm pretty well. I can only speak for me, of course. we're pretty much the same as we've always been, you know. You know, it's neat when you're it's neat when you marry your best friend. That's kind of the way I look at it.
All right,
for sure.
Nice. All right. Well, like I was saying, I said to Vanny when we started here because the introduction got a little thrown off because you guys weren't together. So I really appreciate you coming on. I really didn't have to hassle you guys. I kind of did, I guess, because I really wanted to do this. I didn't want to like let the time get away from me. And as I said to Vanny, as you know, Jeff, I'm wrapping up this season here in the seasonal format of the show, and God knows when I'll come back and yada yada. And it's like I said to Vanny, I'm in about like April of senior year at this point, you know. So it's like I could easily turn around and I'll be like, shit, I forgot to get those guys on the fucking final season. So,
yeah,
you know how it is.
I do.
But it's funny because, like, thinking about it, we're like the old men of, you know, of this podcast. I remember when we were all kind of running around at the beginning of this, and it's like, geez, the landscape's changed an awful lot. But sometimes it hasn't, but at the same time, it's like, you used to know all the different shows. Now it's like, I couldn't even fucking tell you all the different shows that are out there.
Right. Yeah. It's exploded, has it not? I mean, you know.
But I get a sense that, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like these podcasts were, everybody was sort of friendly to each other, and then for a while people were at each other's throats, and now it looks like people are friendly again. Is that right?
I
guess, yeah.
I don't think they're all friendly with, you know, I don't think it's friendly across the board. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know that there's, I know still, that there's there are still, certain... you know, yeah, there's still animosity out there for, you know, for those who want it, and there's always somebody looking for it. So, but maybe it's a lot more. I think it's a lot more. You help us, we'll help you, type thing.
Yeah, I'd say like.
And what does that mean? What does that mean in the realm of paranormal podcasting? You know, just going on each other's shows, it's just a circle jerk, right? I mean, you're not really helping anything.
That's correct. Yeah. Hence,
yeah,
Paris,
yeah, pretty much.
Nuking,
yeah.
You know. So yeah, it's that's exactly it. I mean, it's you wind up running this circular thing of people that
same
you
people.
Know, and I'm really shocked as hell that Tim has been able to keep his show, and he's the only one that I know that has been able to keep his show interesting and edgy and always something new to talk about, even with old guests. You know, I would not be able to do that.
You know, I'm running out of steam now, so.
Yeah.
I appreciate the compliment, but I've tried, yeah. Well, like, not to diminish the conversations, but to what Vaney's asking, sort of like the classic thing I used to joke with you guys about. You know, a lot of people recycle all the same people all the time. You kind of need to fill the weeks in. You need the fill-in guests. You need so you can pick up the phone and call somebody and be like, "Come on the show." You know, even though I had you on like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Which, again, that's not to diminish the conversations, but at the same time, it's like I think that's a lot of why. It's hard to go out and find people to be on these shows, believe it or not. I mean, good people. It's not hard to find.
It definitely is.
Lunatics.
It definitely is. I mean, when I was doing Waypoint over on that network there, that was my job for about maybe the first year, and then the other maybe 8 to 10 months after that, it was a lady named Michelle Thomas. She took care of booking guests for me, and it was a huge let off, but it was kind of a good thing to do at the time, because I only kind of, you know, you get into ufology or the paranormal and you kind of like, you know, your circles and you know who you want to have on. But there's a lot of people that maybe you don't know about that somebody else does. And so they have a kind of a fresh take on who you might like to talk to. And that worked out really well for us for the short bit that she was helping out. And so that helped some. But after a while, I mean, it just becomes that same, like Jeremy says, it's kind of a circle jerk. It's just like, at what point do you just say, I don't know what else to ask and who to ask it to? I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. It's also like I find sometimes that you, or me at least, is sort of like I get on one thing and it's like I don't necessarily have – it's like I just want to talk about it, and I end up imposing it on the guests. Mm-hmm. Or it's like I can't think of a good example where I'll get some idea in my head and I'll be like, what do you think of this? And I've been talking about this a lot on the show, and it's like clearly I just want to talk about it. so I'm foisting it on, you know, I don't even know, whoever's on the show, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of, you pick up on a lot of little things as you do these things for a long time. Now, I guess I kind of build this as like a forced reunion on my part. I checked, now you guys haven't done a show, you brought back the show for a while, sort of on a banal-like schedule, sporadic and sort of when you felt like it. So it looked like you haven't done one since last year. The last time the three of us were on a show together, the world was about to burn down. It was right at the end of our election night special.
Yeah, yeah. Jesus.
Which is crazy. So
yeah,
if you ever want to hear the three of us traumatized, like in the midst of a trauma.
Yeah.
That 20-minute conversation was literally, I remember saying, I'm like, what are you going to do tomorrow when you wake up, Jeff? I don't know. I don't I don't know what world we live in anymore. It was like that.
Yeah.
That serious, folks.
I still don't.
Oh man.
I still don't.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Although,
luckily,
I will say we.
Go ahead, babe.
Maybe we can release it for free at some point because it's probably so old it's worthless. But Jeff and I did record an episode. It was probably last year at this point. I don't know. It was many months ago that we just never released. So I don't know. Maybe we can put that out or something. Just here you go.
Yeah.
Or try to make money off it. Either way.
Well, I mean, really, you know, I don't see any reason why not, of course, to put that one up. That's been my own lackadaisical ways these days to doing that. Just because I think for the past probably close to a year now, got to be honest, I just kind of been trying I don't want to say distance myself, but kind of, you know, dial it back, I guess is the best way to put it. Just to kind of dial back any kind of super public speaking stuff, I guess is the way to put it. I don't know how else to say it other than I've been trying to kind of get back to some things that I've ignored for probably 20 years. And so a lot of this stuff's been put on the back burner. I haven't written in my blog, by the way, in like 3 months or 4 months now. And that was really chugging along pretty good, but you know, I turned 50.
Yeah,
and
it was the blog, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I turned 50 and at that point it was kind of like, well, I'm 50 now. Hey, you ever going to do those art pieces you were talking about? You ever going to do that? You ever going to start painting again? You ever going to start, like, there's all these things that I kind of put on the back burner, you know? And at a certain point, it's like, you know, either fucking do it or don't, but don't sit around crying about it when you don't have time anymore. And so I stopped writing the blog Aaron Parker and I were working on a book together and I kind of, I didn't put it on hold, but I'm rewriting a lot of stuff that we went over and now even that I haven't even been doing that lately. So that's kind of like in a holding pattern of sorts. So I'm sure it's cyclical. I'm sure it'll come back around, but you know, for me, it's just been other things that I decide, you know, hey, it's high time I start doing these things and stop. I don't know, stop fooling around quite so much with this stuff, if that's any kind of answer for you.
Are you still doing the camera?
Nah, it makes perfect. What's that?
No, I stopped Project Oculus probably 4 months ago or 5 months ago, for the simple sake that we had fallen into a routine of even non-routine with them, in that they were on a schedule and either Lisa or Cody or I would kind of set when they would come on. Like we would vary it by maybe an hour or two, so that nobody really knew when they were coming on. And it was always mostly after we were asleep. But even that kind of thing got to be routine. I think the only way that you would be able to effectively do that and see some kind of result from it, is to do what I think we were doing in the very beginning, which is that they just run all the time, except when we were home and doing things in the house and we didn't want to be bothered. So we would run them while we were at work. We'd come home, we'd turn them off, we'd turn them back on when we went to bed. And that got modest results. And we captured maybe three interesting or four interesting things. But after a while, there ceased to be anything going on here. And I knew immediately that was just from the simple sake of there's cameras in the house, and those cameras are now part of our daily routine. So they had kind of an opposite effect, but nonetheless an effect that was discernible by everybody who lives here. So, and again, at some point, yeah, I'm going to pop those back on. But it may be sporadic. It may not be. It may be the kind of thing where I leave them on all the time, and say privacy to the wind, you know. But yeah, that's been on hold for probably 4 months or so.
Now, these were cameras you had like in your house that people could watch for odd activity.
Yeah, we have four of them.
Listeners don't know.
Yeah, we had four cameras set up that were live cams plugged into, the internet backbone, and they streamed to a site where donors and supporters of the project basically could watch at appointed times every night. They'd usually come on around 1:30, 2 o'clock, sometimes 2:30, 3 o'clock, and run until daybreak. And then there were times where I would sporadically turn them on during the daytime. And just let them run. And then anybody who was watching could either tell me when they saw something, but everything was fully monitored and saved. So we had tapes or essentially like a server running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that was recording all the footage from all four cameras round the clock.
And
so, that will... That runs into some money, and luckily I had one donor who Chuck Gearhart was a really dear friend of mine from, I met him way back in the early 80s, the late 80s, early 90s, he donated quite a bit of money to fund those cameras being monitored, and so that was what paid for a lot of that stuff, so... It's a little costly, but, at some point I'm just going to bite the bullet and try it again. But tomorrow night, this was going to happen tonight, only I had to be on your program tonight, Tim. My father-in-law passed away a little over a year ago, and his house has been for sale. I would say it was only on the market for a week and it sold, but it's been kind of in that between time of, closing to be somebody else's house and being packed up from being, the girls who inherited it, their house. And Lisa and Cody went down last night to pick up a lamp, that was pretty much the last piece of furniture in the house. And Lisa came back and she said, "We have to talk." And I said, "What's going on?" And she said, Cody was really freaked out at Dad's and said that there was something there and it wasn't good. And so I didn't get a lot of explanation about it. But then she told me she went to her sister's house to pick up some paperwork. And her sister, in other words, Lisa's nephew, had lived in the house. After Dad passed away, he had lived there for about 6 months or so. And he said he couldn't stay there because he felt like there was something bad in the house. He would hear noises. He said it started in the basement and worked its way up. He said people walking in the house, doors slamming, doors shutting and locking, all that sort of thing. And Cody said to me just privately, last night, he said, "Dad, it's extraordinarily palpable. You can really tell that somebody's there." And he said,
"Have you been over there? Obviously, you haven't been over there since all this."
The girls, Lisa has three sisters, so they pretty much went over and, after Dad was buried and the funeral was had and all of that. It was about 3 months where they didn't do anything with it. And then there was, the donating of clothes and the selling of furniture and the estate sales and all that sort of stuff. And then they started to fix up the house. So they started to paint and they started to repair walls and they started to do yard work and cutting down trees and all of these things that, a guy who's 80, just really can't do that well anymore. And we would all go over and help him take care of the house and take care of the lawn. But when he was sick, he couldn't do those things, and we were more worried about him than the lawn at the time. So after all of that stuff got done, I really expected the girls to get some kind of creep factor in the process of getting the house ready to sell, because it's in that period of change. It's in that liminal state. But nobody said anything. And now the house is done, sold. They actually go to close next Monday. So it's only going to be we're only going to be able to get in there until, you know, maybe tomorrow night is probably going to be my last time in the house. So I haven't sensed anything there at all. But Cody, when he said, "Dad, when I came out, I expected somebody to be standing on the porch in the backyard." He said, "That's how ridiculous it was. Like, you're being watched, and whatever it is, isn't good." And he said, "Whatever it isn't pop." And I said, "Well, you know, you know, I feel like Yoda sometimes. Hear you nothing that I say, you know, you know, it couldn't be any more liminal than what it is right now, because it's not exactly the girl's house anymore. It's not Dad's house anymore, but it's also not the people who are buying it. It's not their house yet. It's very much in that limbo stage of closing to signing papers to it being somebody else's house. So we're going down tomorrow. We're going to take video. We're going to take audio, and we're going to see what happens. You know, I'm very curious. So I'm going to do that tomorrow night. So when opportunity presents itself, I will go. I will do it. But, you know, aside from that, all I want to do is fucking paint. So.
That's good, yeah. Well, I know what you mean about turning 50, because I'm turning 40 in like a year, and I kind of had the same feeling this past January. You know, when it was my birthday, I turned 38. I was like, all right, you're going to be 40 in a couple years. Let's get fucking serious about this life shit, man. You know?
Yeah.
I don't have much time left. I'm probably at least definitely past the halfway point. So, it's like, I've spent a decade on this paranormal fucking podcasting shit. It's time to make hay before the fucking sun comes up, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff.
That's how it feels sometimes.
Hey, Jeremy, you're
not
still
to be
here.
Well, not to be a conversation killer, but is Tim's line really bad for you? Because Jeff's line is
horrible.
Perfect, and Tim sounds like he's underwater. So I hope you're recording. I hope your line is recording okay, because it's really hard to understand what you're saying.
Really?
Oh,
weird.
Yeah. You're
choppy.
Yeah.
All right. Let me.
What?
All right. Let me see. All right. I'll fucking hold on. Let's try this first. All right. Is that any better?
No,
not better.
Not better? Weird. All right, let me hang up and start getting a fresh connection.
Tim, would it be better if I called into a phone line rather than this line, or is this a phone line? Because I'm actually on my phone. I could not get Skype to work, so you have another number.
Everybody sounds fine to me. So, let me tell you what I'll do. I will. I'll hang up and try and reconnect with the thing, and maybe that'll work.
Okay.
All right. Hold on. All right. Hopefully they don't kick you guys off. I think you'll be okay though. So hold on one moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Paratopia Live. I'm your
host.
That's
right. Hello.
And with me, as always, is Jeff Rissman.
Wow,
we finally got rid of him.
Skipping all off the fence. Yeah.
Yes. Marriage and podcasting. Boy, you guys are really in for a treat tonight. All the topics we're covering.
Yes. Ghost.
All right,
Rose.
I'm
Is that
back.
What you're looking for?
All right. Am I better now?
Yes. Much better. Perfect.
All right. Let me know if it happens again. That was weird. Was it like that the whole time we were going, or just to pick up just a minute ago?
For a lot of the time, but I'm not sure. It kicked in at some point. I'm not sure.
Weird. All right. Well, I lost my train of thought. Oh, essentially turning 40 and sort of like being like taking stock of what I've done and what I want to do, you know. And it's like investing all this time in the podcast. It's been great investing the time in the podcast, and I wouldn't do it any differently, but it's like eventually you want to sort of diversify your life.
Yep.
All right. What about you, Annie? You just went off and got married.
Yeah, I diversified my life.
Yeah.
I'm a sleep.
So do you still follow this? Do you still follow this shit, Jeff, or do you not even follow the UFO world? Because there's not much to follow, really.
Do I?
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, I mean, I'm still friends on Facebook with all the same people, so I see it all. You know, but it's like, you know, when it comes to, like, is Tom DeLonge the flavor of the month now? It's like, no, I'm kind of already over that. Like, you know, I've seen that already. And it just feels like deja vu. I mean, all this stuff is so, again, everything is so cyclical in this stuff that, you know, you just wind up hearing the same things over and over, just repeated, and it comes to the same outcome. So, I mean, I pay attention to it as much to know who's saying what about what to whom, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's and it's interesting seeing things about you know, about where I've been and where Jeremy's been a couple of times in this stuff, now happening to other people. That I really enjoy. And I don't mean that in a joking way, actually. I really enjoy it. Yeah, I guess so, in a sadistic way, yeah. You know, seeing, you know, luminaries like Isaac Coy say, I'm out, I'm leaving, I quit. First of the year, I'm done. And here it is a year later, and he's doing all kinds of new stuff. I mean, I don't blame him
yeah.
by any stretch, you know. I don't blame him at all. But that is what it does to you. I mean,
yeah.
And getting away from it is insanely hard. I don't reckon to ever be, you know, like free of it. I mean, I don't see that in my future, but it's how I divide my time now. You know, it's like there are other things in my life that I think are taking a more front seat, and you know, and I hate to say it, but I'm getting a lot more, I feel like I'm getting more forward momentum out of, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I think it's like, I think there's some kind of scientific thing behind it, but it's like when you're learning new shit or engaging yourself in sort of a new or re-engaging in an activity, it's like it refires the brain somewhat, you know, where it releases a shitload of dopamine or whatever, where you're like, I fucking like this. I'm, you know, I'm doing something different, expanding my mind and shit, rather than sort of going through the same routine normally.
Yeah. It's called accomplishment, and it's something that you really don't find much of in ufology.
Well, that's for sure. Now, Vinny, I want to ask you, and cut me off if my thing starts cracking up again, because otherwise I'm just going to keep going as normal. I want to ask you. I asked you ahead of time, Vinny. I asked you both, but I think the question. I think Jeff was like, I don't even want to fucking deal with that. So, but you were like, I have a lot of opinions. So we'll start with you. This, I thought about you guys a lot lately because of this sex scandal, whatever you want to call it, wave in Hollywood and politics and in the world. You know, it's like there's this serious Me Too campaign, this backlash. You know, I don't know what else to call it. It's just crazy. You know, it's remarkable, really, in a lot of ways. But what to connect it to you guys is, it's like this whole Emma Woods thing. If this came out like now, I think there would be serious repercussions. I think a lot of the frustration, I know for you guys, and certainly for me as well, was like no one was fucking listening. No one fucking listened. It's like I hear these women, and in no way, like, do I understand what they went through or anything like that, but it's like you hear them say, no one listened, and it's like, hey, I know a situation where that happened. Like, I know exactly of a situation where that happened, where no one fucking listened except for, like, a few people, and they couldn't do anything about it, you know, except try and tell people. So, I mean, in a sense, it's, like, maddening to see, because it's like you wish that someone would pay fucking attention to this story that's now been out there for, I don't know, probably close to a decade, right? It's been a long time since the Emma Woods thing broke. So, I guess, I mean, what do you think of this? Have you tried to, like, sound the alarm, or, I mean, I feel like you should just be emailing to fucking, like, New York Times and shit to be like, hey, have you seen this fucking story? You know, it's got an alien abductee and a fucking chastity belt and a fucking guy who teaches at Temple University. Like, this is everything that the media should want right now. So I guess, I don't know, I just threw a lot out there, but what's your take on this, Vaney? Have you sort of seen the eerie, you know, similarities and differences here between what's going on in society and what happened with Emma Woods?
Yeah, to me it's another example of how the UFO phenomena is always a few years ahead of us, except in this case, unfortunately, the researcher. But no, I see it, and I get that point of view, and I saw Jack Brewer had posted something on Twitter about it too. Hey, ufology, how about dealing with Emma Woods now that, you know, everyone else is dealing with these sorts of things. I think it's not exactly the same, and I think, I think if you went to 60 Minutes at this point, no one would care. David Jacobs is no longer a professor at Temple. It happened years ago. There aren't a ton of people coming forward because, you know, they saw what happened to her and were like, eh, forget about it. I mean, I do find it interesting that in that we're seeing this happen, the Me Too campaign, and yet there's nobody brave enough in ufology, for instance, Peter Robbins, your buddy Peter Robbins, you know, isn't he still defending Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs? And he's an actor, that's funny. But people like him who could come forward and be like, you know what, I see this, and I want to change my vote. I want to do the right thing. But there's no impetus to do that because, unlike Hollywood and unlike politics, the thing about hypnosis and Jacobs and Hopkins, as Jeff has noted, so much of the industry, the cottage industry and of the mythology of all this alien abduction stuff is built on hypnosis and specifically built on the backs of those two people. So are they really going to kill that gravy train to do the right thing now? I just don't see it.
Yeah, and also, abductions are like such a fucking afterthought. You know,
point, now that you say that, wait, let me interrupt you, because now that you say that,
yeah,
I haven't even made this connection, but I mean, think of if like professional wrestlers came forward and Or porn actresses, where I was sexually harassed, would be like, well, no kidding. Hang out with. Look at the industry you're in. Wouldn't it be the same thing where you'd be like, well, duh, you're a crazy person who's getting hypnosis from a history teacher who thinks that hybrids secretly are taking over the world. Of course this is happening to you, moron. Like, wouldn't that be the mainstream answer to this?
I think so. Yeah, I was going to say, when you said, like, there's not a lot of women who come forward, it's like, yeah, because you'd also have to first be like, okay, I'm an alien abductee, but that's not why I'm here to talk to you. So, and then immediately you're already fucking, you know, the horse is out of the carriage or whatever. You know, it's like they're like, all right, get the fuck away from me. Yeah. Well,
and
it seems like no one gives
a
fuck.
Emma Woods, is a woman, obviously, but you know, the hypnosis thing is affecting men and women. You know, he was drawing, I mean, we had talked to Brian Reed on the show. You know, Jacobs is drawing in men to his fantasy world, too. So it's not exactly a sexual thing, even though there's the chastity belt and all that stuff. I mean, I guess essentially the sexual stuff isn't about sexual stuff, right? It's all about power and control and whatever psychological blah, blah, blah it's actually about. So in that sense, but I mean, I wouldn't say that this is specifically sexual, even though it has those elements to it. So I don't know.
Right, right. But in a sense, it's like how sexual, I mean, it is sexual in a sense, but it's like how sexual was like what Louis C.K. was doing or whatever. It's like it's all about power and shit. So,
right.
Yeah. But I can see what you're saying in a sense, because it's like I think there were other people beyond Emma Woods, but not too many. So it really does kind of boil down to a very he said, she said situation. And then also, you know, that both parties
are... I mean, I find the hypnosis thing more annoying, you know. I find that more grating. And, you know, God knows, you know, I do this show called The Experience, and I do it on Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country. And I love Whitley, but, you know, he'll still have on a hypnotist now and then, you know. And it's like he knows my position. He basically agrees to an extent, and yet here come these hypnotists. Or I just interviewed a guest who, you know, said to me, now I know you don't like hypnosis, but here are my experiences that came from self-hypnosis of reincarnation memories. And it's like, why are you telling me that you know that I don't like or promote hypnosis, and now you're going to tell me your experiences about that? Like, why would you do
that?
Yeah, it's weird. There's just... It's odd to me that this hasn't caught on, especially to people who want this to be taken seriously by science, right? And by the mainstream. So if science says, as it does, that hypnosis is not a good memory retrieval tool, it's good for behavior modification, then why aren't they just course correcting and going, oh, okay, well, we got to look at other ways to do this?
Why isn't who looking at it? You alien experiencers or whatever?
Experiencers and researchers. Why do hypnotists exist in this bill?
Because I think a lot of the people are they're starting with an answer and working backwards. So it's like they think that they can get the best. They based on the past, they know that they can get the confirmation for their answer via hypnosis, even though it's flawed.
I don't know. And at this point, does it matter? Because now all the hypnosis books have been written. We know what the storylines are. We know what the narratives are. It's like Roswell. After a while, you can only hear this happened or this is happening without any evidence at all before you're just like, well, who cares?
You yeah, know? I think. Hybrids
are taking over the world, but they haven't? Well, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you hit the nail on that. That's what I was saying. Maybe Jeff can chime in here where it's like, I know just from my experience, and I'm sure from yours, Jeremy, it's like, I look back, I mean, I got into this in, like, 2003, so we're talking, like, almost 15 years. It's like, nothing has, like, fundamentally fucking changed. You know what I mean? I know, Jeff, you've been mixed up in this, like, I want to say since, like, the 80s, but definitely since the 90s, so it's like, you're talking 20, 30 years now. So it's like, when you look at it that way, it's like, yeah, it's like... Like, to make any sense, like, okay, the hybrids, they're taking over the planet. It's like, well, by the time they finish the fucking job, I'm going to be gone, man. I'm going to spend my whole life worrying about the fucking hybrids taking over the planet. They're going to reveal themselves when I'm 70. I'll have a heart attack and die. And it's like, boy, that was a huge waste of fucking time worrying about the hybrids. So,
well,
you know,
the
I don't know
is,
what point I'm trying
to
make, but I think you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. As to Jeremy's questions about why aren't they asking different questions? Why aren't researchers and experiencers both kind of taking what they know now about hypnosis and all of that? Why aren't they taking that and going in a different way? And I wrote a thing for the blog a while back about charisma and kind of how this works in this field, and I think I might have touched on it a little bit about the whole Emma Woods things, but Hopkins and Jacobs in particular, in my mind at least, Jacobs less so than Hopkins, these are very charismatic guys. And so when Jacobs was talking to these two experiencers, because there is Elizabeth who was part of that triangle at the time, when you've got all those things in play and he's the charismatic authority, he's the leader, he's the guy that they're both clamoring to, You know, that helps to facilitate that whole adult Dungeons and Dragons type of scenario where, you know, he gets so into his own head and he gets so into his own theories that they become real for him, even though he knows in his inner circumlocution that this is not real. He knows this isn't real, but they're all kind of playing this game. And in the process of that, the way that usually ends or how it ends is that reality tends to creep up in these things, you know. You know, back when Linda Corta was talking about being abducted, you know, by human people, you know, George Hansen went to Bud and to a couple other researchers that were working on this and said, well, you know, this is attempted murder. We have to call the police. And, oh, no, we can't do that. We mustn't do that. And so that right there was the breakdown of the fantasy scenario. When real-world intrusions creep into that, it kind of wakes these people up. They snap immediately out of it. And, you know, looking over the whole scope of the Emma Woods thing, that's very much what I saw. Now, here's the other part that I think got missed is that the charisma coupled into that Dungeons and Dragons, that fantasy role play thing, when that begins to happen, guess what? The people who follow the work of that charismatic leader, they also fall into that. And so the reason that they're not picking up on it and saying this is wrong, this can't be happening, is because that level of reality has not impeded into their scenario, into their, you know, the structure that they've built up in their own heads for how this works. And at some point it will. At some point, a shocking reality will hit people that may intrude into some other part of their life. But often it doesn't. And the bad part is that fantasy or that strange schism kind of gets aggressively defended more times than not. And that's what I see happening. That's kind of why I just kind of ebbed away from that, because, you know, you can only do so much. And I felt like we had done everything humanly possible that Jeremy and I could help to do. And so at a certain point, I have to say, okay, well, there it is. It's tabled for me, and there really isn't much more that we could say or do here. Because it's not only that Jacobs and Hopkins and all of their ilk are protecting this weird schism that they think is some kind of research, but that the people out there who have subscribed to it and built theories upon it, they're also defending it because they have something to defend, which is their work built atop it. So, like I said, there's only so much you're going to be able to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
let's add one more. Can I add one more thing to it that I've just, you know, noticed since Trump, which is shockingly, for people who claim to, you know, be looking for the truth beyond the mainstream and not be suckered in by things, there are an awful lot of people in ufology who are Trump supporters and who are just, you know, have revealed themselves to be batshit crazy. And so let's not forget that there's a large contingent of batshit crazy and quote unquote investigating these things. And so, you know, maybe you're just doomed to fail from that perspective too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know what motivates. I mean, a lot of them were, I think they just, the whole thing's a fucking mess. I mean, I find myself, I mean, look, I just like, I hate Trump, I guess, so I can't really say that, but it's like the people that, like, hate Hillary Clinton with the vehemence of, like, that still are still, like, who are still like, but what about Hillary? When it's like, dude, the fucking election was a year ago. No one gives a fuck about, like, you can hound this woman until she dies? Like, what is, yes, is the answer. They plan to, but to me, it's like, I just think I could see a motivation in a sense where it's like, people are getting older and they have fucking, they just want to blow shit up. You know what I mean? There's a sense of dismay, some of them.
Well, then admit it. you know? You know, just say it.
Oh, that's the problem.
That
I mean,
isn't a criminal billionaire who wants to destroy us all. I mean, can we stop pretending that? Can we stop pretending that we're not racist, misogynistic, blah, 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 go down the list, homophobic, xenophobic, when we support a guy and benefit from the policies of a man who is. So by proxy, his supporters are. You know, I mean, again, you know, we can have this conversation politically, but in terms of ufology, these are people who claim to not believe the government. They claim to be above it all, and they know the truth, and it's there, and yada, yada. And then you see what they fall for, you know, when it's like Trump, Greer, Jacobs,
yeah.
Go down the list. Like, these are the purveyors of truth. They're going to get to the bottom of this. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people – and I'm sure they're listening – some of them, most of them probably stopped listening a long time ago because I'm not too – I don't hold my tongue when it comes to this shit, but I think there's a fucked up, weird contingent of people who genuinely believe that, like, and now don't laugh too much, as crazy as it sounds, that, like, Trump and his cohorts are, like, overthrowing the New World Order. It's like, you know, I read these conspiracy forums and shit, and it's like, what fucking world do you live in, dude? Like, this is not, like, an overthrow of the New World Order going on. Like, this is just, like... I don't know what the fuck it is, but if it's like
destroying the Environmental Protection Agency.
Right. Well, I joked on the show with Go Rightly. It's like, you know, maybe they are overthrowing the New World Order, but it's like it's being done by some kind of fucked up criminal enterprise involving Vladimir fucking Putin and other fucking people. And it's like I don't want these assholes running the world either. So it's like it's the devil. Which one do you want? It's like, do I want the globalists running the world or fucking the crazy fucking, you know, dictators? Like, give me a fucking break. I'll take the globalists, man, every day.
Yeah. Your phone line, yeah, I think you had too much anger because you just started cracking up again.
Oh, no. Am I all right now?
Oh, you're back. You're back. Banal's back, B.
All right. I'll try not to get fired up, although it's hard during a Christmas party.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. But I think, the gist I'm trying to make, in case I have to go around and cut that around, is like that these, you know, if it's an overthrow of the New World Order, I don't necessarily want the people that are doing it, Trump and company, to be the ones in charge of the fucking, of the world when it's all said and done. You know, like that to me is just crazy talk.
Yes.
I don't know how
I
we go on
lizard
that.
People.
They've done a pretty good job so far.
I mean,
far.
Really, at that point, aren't you voting for David Icke lizard people or David Jacobs hybrids?
I suppose. I just want to vote for a Nordic, man.
There you go. Well, you did.
They seem like them.
You voted Trump.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, we'll pivot away from politics because I'm afraid we're going to get – I never get any nasty letters. I think people just stop listening because I just rant and shit on this show about how crazy things are. But I saw somebody post on Facebook, thank you for saying something, because a lot of shows, they won't even get into this, which kind of extends in a sense to what you're saying, Vaney, where as far as people supported Trump, I noticed that there are also a lot of fucking people that just didn't say – that just in private they'll tell you what they think, but then they won't, you know – they'll hold their tongue on their show because they don't want to upset people. And it's like 300 people listen to your fucking show. What do you care? You know?
You talking about politics or about
I'm talking politics? About podcasting and politics.
Hmm.
You understand what I mean? Like,
now is not the time to hold your tongue. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, no, I don't want to offend anyone. I'm sorry. We're living in we're living at the very time where you should be offending people.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you know, I've heard from people. I offered to go on a show before the election because I was fired up about it and you know, wanted to at least try and extend myself as much as possible and, I'm you know, to make my perspective clear that I didn't think that Trump should be president. And it's like the show was like, no, we don't want to even talk about the election. We don't want to go there. It's like – you know, then after the election, they're the ones, you know, they're amongst the many who are like, how'd this happen? It's like, how this happened is you didn't fucking do anything, dude.
You don't want to offend that 35% of the nation that was gerrymandered to vote him in. I mean, this is the
yeah.
thing that gets me, is like, we talk about this as though he's this, you know, super popular juggernaut, and really, he's not. It's just gerrymandered. The whole thing is rigged, so we got to get rid of that. So maybe that's what people need to be talking about more so than, you know, what Trump tweeted.
Yeah, because gerrymandering is wicked sexy.
That's right.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Gerrymandering. Unless it's Jerry Mathers. I don't know. See, I don't know what the fuck that even means.
I didn't think this episode could go off the rails. Boy, was I wrong.
Until Jerry Mathers showed up. Oh, man. Well, I tried to say a couple times while you... Well, but you guys are making points, so I kind of step back. It seems, just to go back to the abduction thing, because, you know, I've beaten the politics horse for a while. It does seem like no one gives a fuck about abductions anymore anyway. And as you rightly said, I think, Jeremy, or maybe it was Jeff, to put it in a different sense, it's like it's been ETH'd. It's just sort of like this accepted storyline. You know what I mean? That the aliens come and take people and they probe them, huh? And then they bring them back. It's like that's, you know, and no one, it's weird. There's like a mental block in a sense where no one will go any further. It's fucked up. People, the mainstream society, they just, it's a thing, but they don't fucking, apparently it's not a thing enough to like take seriously at all. It's really weird.
Well, it's still shoved down their throats. I mean, if you turn on any of the History Channel stuff, Ancient Aliens, right? It's not called Ancient Mystery. It's Ancient Aliens. We know what it is. And go down the list of things, and it's the same talking heads over and over, saying the same stuff over and over. So, you know, it's no wonder to me that people have no sense of anything else. What I find interesting is, you know, with my show, I'm mainly interviewing experiencers, and I have yet to interview anyone who has that mainstream abduction thing happening. It's all over
yeah.
the place. And that's more indicative of what this is, but that's a hard sell, I guess, on TV when you can just package up, look, it's aliens. But I think Jeff has said to me, at least, that he notices a shift in ufology, and correct me if I'm wrong, where people are at least within ufology, are more open to these other perspectives that we were talking about on Paratopia years and years ago. So maybe with that type of shift, it'll translate into the talking heads on TV and therefore the mainstream. But who knows how long that'll take. I don't know. People might lose interest at that point.
I don't know that that'll ever get to that period in media. Because that involves a lot more cerebral effort to get your head around, and I don't know that TV is built for that. You know, it's definitely not an instant gratification angle to look at any of the other options that you go to. But I do see that there seems to be a shift in people being at least willing to listen to, you know, trickster theorem or, things that, you know, like psychedelic type consistencies across that in paranormal experiences. That sort of gist of things. They seem a lot more interested in it than they used to be. I remember years ago when I was on UFO updates, back when it was like a mailing list or something, I said something about liminality and anti-structure and all this kind of stuff. And Jerome Clark said to me, I don't think we need any of your wild ass ideas in here. So I was like, okay, well, you know, I guess I'm out of that discussion. I see how forward thinking these people are. So, you know, I just started, you know, I mean, more or less, you do what you can do in a public way. But, you know, I think everybody just needs to kind of pursue their own direction with this stuff. I really do. I don't see the point in trying to. I think everybody will, if they're honest with themselves, and that's the crucial bit. I think if everybody's honest with themselves, at a certain point, everybody will kind of end up in that same space. You know, I think the older that I get, the less likely I see, the experience or phenomena being just an A to B dotted line to a UFO. If you get what I mean, it's that line is extraordinarily blurred, at least in my opinion, at least from the people that I've talked to and my own stuff. That line is really murky. So, and I think more people these days are willing to say, I agree, that is a murky line. It's a very indescript connection between the UFO and what we used to refer to as the occupants or the visitors or whatever. People are willing to look a little bit deeper into that stuff these days than they would. And in very complex ways, like the psychedelic thing, that's a very complex subject when you start talking about the similarities in that, in a DMT flash and a paranormal experience involving others. There are some serious, seriously deep and complex issues there that have to be addressed, you know, and they still, in the end, the interesting bit is that they still fundamentally ask the same question, you know, what are we here for? What is this all about? Is this real or is it not? You know, all of those fundamental questions. So, it's probably just it's like a whack-a-mole, you know, it's probably just like a game of whack-a-mole. You never get to hit the little guy on the head, but he'll pop up from different angles and, you know, whoever swings fastest gets the most, you know? But I do see it changing. I do see more people, it's not a large group of people, but I do see more people willing to listen, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like I wonder if we're in sort of a UFO bubble, though, because but it seems like a lot of the people I talk to, and are sort of in my circle of friends, are of the of that open-minded opinion, you know. But sometimes it's like you look out across the horizon, and it's like there are people that like believe that are just ready to throw down, behind Tom Long or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like who watched the fucking Stephen Greer movie. And insist that it's real.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, are things changing, or am I just pulling back and join, or is this an exodus of right-thinking people? You know, we'll never know, really, or we'll know.
Just for me, from my perspective on this stuff, and I'll just ask you guys this. Does it seem odd to either of you that someone like Jacques Vallée is not more is not further down the line, or is not further into the much more complex theories about this stuff than he seems to be? Because he's always kind of going to be the benchmark to me. Between him and George Hansen and a couple other people, these guys are like giants to me. And anything that any of us would do, it's only because we're standing on their shoulders. That's the only reason we get to be where we are. When I see that Jacques is putting together this database, you know, my question immediately jumps forward, what are the qualifications for creating a UFO database? How do you qualify what goes in? And knowing how elusive and self-negating and all these things that we've talked about before, all of the common traits that seem to exist between all these paranormal phenomena, if that's known, then what good would this database really do you? What is the tip of the spear that you're trying to mount here? That's what I would want to know. It doesn't seem like something that he would want to do. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm explaining this right.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same camp as Vaney. I've always kind of thought that maybe Valet like has figured something out and is trying to work backwards. You know, even though I critique other people for that kind of thing, it's like maybe. You know, so he's like, if I can just get we can just synthesize the data to show that it's this, then we can,
yeah,
you know, conjure up some kind of repeatability or something. You know, but I don't know. That's the only thing I can think. You know, but it's all very.
When Jeremy and I interviewed him, mm-hmm. We talked about, or Jeremy had asked him at a certain point in the interview, that there was kind of this circulating notion or rumor that. He had tried to start a Skinwalker ranch. And was that true?
Yeah.
And was it successful? And he said, yes, it's true. And it was marginally successful, Jeremy, am I right?
It was marginally successful, yeah. But then he thought you could triangulate any area and create some sort of paranormal thing, right?
Right.
I don't know if that's where you're going.
So was that, you know, what was that? I mean, why... You know, if that's the direction where you get some kind of modest result, then why is that not the extrapolation moving forward? Like, why would you not engage that moving forward? You know, if that's doable, you know, to any marginal degree, then what would make that even more come forth out of something like that? I mean, that's just what I'm thinking about these days with this stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It just seems,
it seems odd to me.
I don't know.
It's interesting. I think I understand kind of what you're saying in a sense where it's like, we're on the outside trying to figure out what he might like, what's in his mind. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's like, if he's creating, if he tried the Skinwalker Ranch thing, and he's turned, I mean, he could also, you know, be having multi-projects at the same time or whatever, but it's like, maybe there's something in that database that will improve the Skinwalker idea or whatever information he learned from that experience or project or whatever you want to call it. You know, maybe he was like, okay, well, I just need to find the right spot where it will be, you know, amplified. And, you know, the only way to figure that out would be if I had a database, you know what I mean? It's like we're kind of just following along trying to connect the dots of what he's doing.
Yeah, that's entirely possible, yeah. I don't know.
That's the only thing I can think of.
I mean, you could be very right about that. Now I haven't read John Alexander's new book. I don't know if either of you have, but
I have it, and Patrick wants me to get him on the show, so I may actually do. I may actually get him on the show before we wrap things up.
He's a really interesting guy to communicate with. I mean, he really is, and you know. And when I talked to him at a fairly small gathering in near DC, I mean, he flat out told me, you know, that. You know, when you boil down Skinwalker Ranch and you boil down the things that happen there, what you walk away from or walk away with is it's the trickster. You know, and he actually said that. And you know, and that it's this conscious you know, predictive kind of intelligence that's behind all this stuff, and that's a precognitive I forget how he verbalizes it, but it's some kind of self-aware, self-conscious, predictive element that does this. So I'd really like to read his new book. I'm going to get it. I'd be very curious to see where he's going with this. And him and Jacques Vallée are very, I think of them in tandem with each other because they're friends and they, I'm sure, exchange notes on all this stuff. But, to me, that's where all my interest would lie, with George Hanson, with Jacques Vallée, with John Alexander and people like that. And that's a pretty narrow view of what I see that's valuable in this stuff. And everything else, like the Tom DeLonge and the Greers and all the other host characters, that just doesn't seem to be very important anymore, even to the notion of comedy.
That's just like fluff.
Like, I can't even make funny jokes about it anymore, if I ever could. It's just, I don't see anything amusing about it anymore. It's just kind of like a broken record.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Vanny, what do you have to say about all this valet discussion? Before you got a chance to talk.
Speaking of broken record, well, as far as Jacques Vallée goes, it could be that he's a computer genius and has a program that he wants to run the data through, looking for something specific, maybe some program he's invented. I don't know. I just invented that off the top of my head. But speaking of broken record, the Trickster, at least according to Young, that there are these archetypes and these archetypal patterns that are alive. And I've been reading his theory about them, and the Trickster is like the initial one. It's the initial pattern that you have to transcend. So what does it say if we are dealing with a Trickster, that we never get past the Trickster to the next level? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that say that there is no next level in this stuff, that it's always going to present you with, nope, that's not what I am, because the question is the thing? Or is there a thing that it is, and we just haven't gotten to it because we're so stuck with these answers that we've given ourselves, we're just stuck at level one here over and over and over again until such time as we get it.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. Who knows?
That would be Whitley's, conscious evolution type thing, the perception of evolution. To where if the Trickster is, like you say, level one, we could be on level five and not even know it. I mean, I'll put it this way: if you can't see the target, how do you know if you hit it? If it keeps hiding that target, how do you know if you're hitting the mark or not? And if you do hit the mark, does it just kind of lead you in another direction, which is another learning point, and then you get to that point and you learn that and you move on? But as you're learning these things, it's doing it so, in such a gradual way that you don't know what you're learning. You don't know. These just become the things. I think Jeremy and I think I said this to you like a billion times on Paratopia. I think, I think when we were talking about disclosure back then, I had said something like, I don't think there's going to be this top-down revelation, oh my God, moment. It's just going to evolve into something that everybody just knows. And I think that's kind of, if it's some kind of progression that the Trickster is baiting us with and pulling the carrot, the carrot is obviously going somewhere and we're following the carrot. But where's the carrot? Is it moving forward? Probably. But it's kind of those, it's one of those things where it's so gradual, it just becomes something that you know as you progress along. So in other words, yeah, we're always going to feel like we're behind the eight ball and we don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting, though, too, because as we wrap the show up and everything, this Banal of America, it's like I joked, like all the questions will be answered Because, you know, fucking, it's a paranormal show. None of the questions are going to be answered. So it's like Lost. but to me, I've had a lot of time sort of to look back on this sort of stuff and all the years we've been doing this and kind of like how we joked about, like, the hybrid invasion. At the same time, it's like there's also, you know, I mean, when I first started the show, like, it was like 11 years ago now, it was sort of like, oh, the world is waking up, man. We're almost at a tipping point. Like, the world, you know, everyone's gonna get enlightened to this. And this isn't necessarily speak to what you're saying in a sense, Jeff. It's just sort of like this expectation, this bullshit we were fed all these years, you know, that like, oh, we're waking up. And it's like, no, you look around the world now, over a decade later, and it's like, no, shit's worse, man. Like, I don't know if it's like this natural human condition that there's like an internal struggle, like, with the human species, where it's like we're going to evolve or we're going to fucking blow ourselves up. But it certainly seems like shit's getting worse. Shit's getting, like, intense and like, tangible. And it's not like that people are waking up to enlightenment. It's just like they're going out of their fucking mind. I don't know what, you know. I don't know. If I should throw a question at the end of that, but it's just like I wonder where it's going, because it's like it feels like if there's going to be any enlightenment, it has to be an individual enlightenment, and to hope that like and to try and pull everybody else along, which I think is a problem that the paranormal has in a sense, where it's like, you know, we're truth seekers, we're going to get disclosure for everybody. It's like, just get disclosure for yourself, man. Don't fucking, you know, I'm good.
Yeah.
Don't. Yeah. So, to me, it's...
Well, in terms of the culture at large, you know, it's gone off the rails. We're a brain culture. We're, you know, naturally we should be a heart culture. But for some odd reason, brain culture wins out. And the ramifications are, you know, if you're unhealthy, tick-tock. Eventually you either get healthy or you die. And so I think we're at that precipice culturally. And in terms of ufology, I think it's interesting that the surface level of anything is always the shallow thing, right? So that's true in literature, it's true in religion, it's true in politics. Whatever the literal fundamentalist thing is the shallow facade. And yet people in ufology who subscribe to the shallow facade of the nuts and bolts don't see that. They think that the depth lies in finding the document, or finding, you know, the thing that says there's wreckage. They think that the physical proof of something is the deep thing. So
right, right. Yeah.
I think until they see the problem there, and maybe part of that problem is that people like Jacques Vallée, who do, or at least did, have the public's ear for a time, didn't stick around. You know, he pops in and out when he wants to because he sees that it's a shit show. And people like George Hansen were, you know, never popular to begin with. I mean, these are the people that should be front and center saying, listen, just saying exactly what I just said, and then making the case the way that they can. You know, maybe that would get people to see it. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem. I mean, herein we run into the circular thing of, well, if it's Trickster, that it's never going to work in the first place. So, because all the patterns of people's psychology is, it's almost instinctive. It's almost like something takes over and it becomes a shit show, just by natural law. It can never reveal itself. So,
well,
there you go.
I mean, the thing to me is that, and see, this gets really complicated really fast, and I'm not sure I'm able to even explain it, but. The notion of just I mean, take for instance any case that you want to look at in ufology. You know, you've got these hallmarks of you know, you have somebody they have an experience, they're investigated, the experience seems to be true, the pictures seem to check out, and there becomes this schism that runs through this, whereby that person feels compelled to fake something, a la I mean, take a pick of anybody these days, that, you know, that something has to keep going because there's an expectation. And then, you know, that turns into the shit show of the territorial behavior of investigators. People keep things close to the cuff. Nothing gets shared. Nothing gets, you know, expounded on. Meanwhile, the phenomena ramps up yet again because it's in some kind of response to hoaxing. I mean, these are things that are antithetical to the entire conversation of people like, you know, Isaac Coy and Kurt Collins, who want to keep things in a very clinical and organized fashion, you know, thereby poring over the minutia of every instance, of every case, of every, you know, historical fact that went down about a UFO sighting. So it all turns into this garbled mess, right? So I think the portion where the trickster may be forcing us into is to gain fucking control of ourselves and recognize these aspects as true. Recognize what's right in front of you that you can't deny because it's there time and time and time again. And to continue to ignore it and to continue to pour over the minutia of meaningless bullshit is really the downfall. The downfall is not that it's self-negating, that it lies, that it deceives, and that it, like it or not, people in general will take part in that deception as it pertains to the paranormal. That, to ignore that, is to ignore what you're trying to find out. You know, and I see this every day. This has largely been the reason that I've dropped away from this stuff, because people want to continue with the delusion that they have a handle on this thing. And I think what the trickster is trying to do, or if there's a place it's trying to lead us, it's trying to make us say, I don't understand why it's this way. It seems to negate itself. It seems to lie. It seems to be deceptive. And it also seems to play into fakery. It seems to revel in fakery. You know, to continue to ignore these things, that's not productive. And so, you know, again, when you see these people poring over minutia of Roswell, I mean, I just want to throw up.
Yeah, I saw your post about that a few weeks, you know, a couple, like in September or something. And I don't know if I posted it at the time or not, but it was like, can we extend that like all the way up to like Rendlesham? Like, I mean, how far can
Because
I'm tired of, like, all these – even Phoenix Lights is almost at the level now where it's like, you know, it didn't break the paradigm. You got to let it go after, like, let's say a decade.
Now, listen. Kids, we love Santa. We have to say it. I have to say it. We love Santa. Everybody loves Santa. But remember, December 25th, baby Jesus' birthday. We must keep that in mind. December 25th, baby Jesus. Just thought I'd get that in. We love Santa, but let's not be silly.
Oh, that's nice. Merry Christmas.
All right. You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This just in, Santa Claus is dead.